This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We discussed last week the split personality of the Nozir. Where on the one hand, the Gemara proves tiny stuff with others. That the Nozir is a chote, is considered a sinner. Ma Talmud Loimar, the Kiper Olov Me'asher Chotah L'Nefesh. What does it mean when it says that he needs atonement for his sin? Chita Eze Nefesh Chotah Zeh. What sin did this man perform? Answers the Bryce, Se'elo Shetzir Atzmo Min Hayai. The fact that he caused himself to suffer the self-denial of wine. That's chote, one isn't allowed to do that. One isn't allowed to cause oneself suffering. On the other hand, Rav Elozo, Emenikro Kodesh, is called a holy person. This one who only caused himself tzar in one area, that's the area of his hair, Nikro Kodesh, for that is called Kodesh. How much more so one who causes himself pain from in other areas, how much more so is he a Kodesh? So what is the philosophy here, we ask? Is one meant to afflict oneself with pain? Is there merit in that or isn't there merit in that? On the one hand, one is considered a chote, one is considered a sinner, and he has to bring a korban chatos, he has to bring a sin offering. For the fact that he didn't have wine, that he barred himself, prohibited himself, denied himself wine for 30 days. And on the other hand, the Gemara says, the Pasuk says he's a Kodesh, he's a holy person, because he caused himself suffering. And we explained it with a Medrash, in which Shimon HaTzadik said, that in all his days as a Kohen Gadol, as a Kohen, he said, Lo yochalti oshom nozir l'pam achas. I only ate from the korban of a nozir once. He told the story, you'll remember, of this very attractive young man from the south with beautiful long hair, and I said to him, what brought you to become a nozir, thus requiring you to cut off his beautiful hair? And he confided in me that he was once filling his trough with water at the well, he saw his reflection in the water, and his yetzer hara overcame him, and his yetzer hara tried to persuade him to leave Avodas Hashem and to seek his pleasures elsewhere. And he said, what right have you got to take pleasure and pride in something which is not your own? Let me dedicate you, meaning my hair, to heaven, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I will shave it off the Shemayim. And I bent over and kissed him, says Shimon HaTzadik, v'amarti lo, and I said to him, k'moscho yirbu osei ritzon hamokom b'Yisrael, like you may there be more who do the will of Hashem among Israel, alecha omar akosuv l'hazir l'Hashem. That's what it means to become a nozir for Hashem's sake. So we see here already that there's such a thing as becoming a nozir for Hashem and becoming a nozir for oneself. Two types of nazirim. And Shimon HaTzadik believed that nearly all the nazirim, except this one, were not for Hashem. They weren't doing it for God. And the Medrash asked, did Shimon HaTzadik not eat other korban chatos, other sin offerings? Did he keep away from all sin offerings? No, answered the Medrash, it wasn't that he was worried about a sin offering. A sin offering he would eat from. But he was worried that since he says, people tend to become nazirim out of aggression. And once they've taken on the oath as an act of aggression, afterwards they will regret it. And once they have regretted it, the korban they bring after it is as if it's not really kodshim, it's as if it's not really a valid korban. And it comes out that one's eating ordinary meat dressed up like a korban, which one isn't allowed to do. But this one, the zeh mitavish of hadas noda refiv l'livei shon. This one took his neder well considered and thought out, and his mind and his mouth were at peace with one another. We discussed that medrash last week, and we showed the different aspects, the different experiences that bring a person to become a nozir. And although becoming a nozir is a specific case covered in the Torah of taking on more than the Torah requires of one, the Torah says you're allowed to drink wine. The Torah says you don't have to shave off your hair after 30 days. The Torah says when you want a haircut, you can take a haircut. This person, but the Torah provides a channel, provides the opportunity for a person who wants to take upon himself more severe laws than the Torah itself gives, there is the opportunity to become a nozir. Altogether, this is interesting. The Torah foresees the possibility that an individual will want to be frumer than the Torah itself. There's such a thing, and the Torah makes provision. Now the question is, does the Torah make provision? Is this a suggested, a recommended route, but it's in fact desirable to take upon oneself more and more severe restrictions? Is there merit in self-denial? Or is the Torah saying, look, there are peculiar people who like to deny themselves all sorts of things? There's a way to do it legally as well, there's a way to do it within the Torah. And in that we find the two views. On the one hand he's called a Kodesh, and on the other hand he's called a Chote. He's called a holy man and he's called a sinner. For doing just that, for that self-denial, which self-denial is permitted in this case by the Torah. Nevertheless, this funny attitude towards him, even though it is permitted and he did it, he's called a Chote, he's got to bring a sin offering, but he's a Kodesh, he's a holy man, what is it? And we see in this Medrash that Shimon HaTzadik believes that most people who take upon themselves the zeros, who take upon themselves these additional restrictions, do so out of aggression, self-denial as a means of aggression. And we discussed that concept fairly thoroughly, how we tend to blame the objective world for our faults, and how to see virtue also in the objective world. The difficulty with which we have to realize that it's not a question of whether the object is good or the object is bad, the subject is good or the subject is bad. What is critically important is to examine the relationship between the subject and the object. The fact that no objects are bad, that Ibn Yishon didn't make anything bad. Everything in the world is created by God, and therefore everything in the world is good. The relationship that we establish with the world around us, that's the questionable part. This evening I want to talk more about the other side of it. What merit is there in correct self-denial? Is that a channel? Is that an attitude which is acceptable? We discussed the method last week. We discussed that the method is not self-denial, but the method is a reduction of a sense of entitlement. I've got to understand that I'm not entitled to what I've got, and therefore I don't establish a possessive relationship with it. That's what's important. I can enjoy it, but I don't enjoy it in a possessive sort of way. And as long as I'm able to reduce my sense of possessiveness about the things about, around and about me, as long as I'm able to reduce my sense of entitlement to it, that I'm entitled to it, it's mine, and it's my due, then automatically there is a certain sense of denial that results. As this Nozir said, as this young man from the south said, Olai lahagdish chol ha-shomayim. He didn't say, I'm going to cut all you off here. When he looked at himself, he didn't get angry with himself. Let's go through the psychology of this man. He's a religious young man. And he looks into the spring, and he sees the reflection of this beautiful, gorgeous young man. Don't forget, they didn't have mirrors in those days. Mirrors were very rare. So it was the first time he'd really seen himself. And he looks at himself and he's amazed, he's overcome at his own beauty, at his own gorgeousness. And the Yetzer Hara gets hold of him. And says, a young man like you, what are you doing learning Rishi? You need to be in the real world. Not in this learning Torah business. Learning Torah is for dropouts. Person like you could be a success at whatever you tried. Whatever you've been learning Torah for, go off to New York, go off to Europe,
capital, by your appearance alone, your first impression, you'll be able to achieve whatever you want. You'll be able to talk people into whatever you want. You'll be able to attract the most eligible of young ladies. You'll be the center of every party. You'll be the center of every social scene. The world is open to you, young man. What are you doing sitting in yeshiva? Several things could happen in reaction in such a young man. The one is, he could give into it. You know, you're right, never thought of it. He pack his bags and go to Paris. The other thing that could happen is he could say to himself, he could push it out of his mind. Go away, Yitzhak, go away. Nothing to do with you. That, by the way, doesn't work. A human being is made of very many varied and rich, powerful passions. And just as we said last week that every object in the world is created by the Ribbono Shel Olam and is therefore good and worthy, so every part of the human being is created by the Ribbono Shel Olam and is good and is worthy, including all our passions and all our desires and all our ambitions. That's also created by the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's also good and it cannot be destroyed. Tells the Rav said, if one tries to destroy one's passions, apart from the fact that that is an act of suicide, it doesn't work, because you can only submerge a passion, and before you know what, it comes out with even greater strength and with even greater power than you ever thought. You can't destroy a passion; it's indestructible. One has to be very careful. That is a beautiful piece of the Chaim Volozhiner. Sorry, Ronnie, do you think I'm thinking the name of the Chaim Volozhiner? With respect, he says, he stuck to Sarayas Vesichosa. Seeing and indulging in conversation with attractive ladies, which to any man must have an effect, unless he's not a man, and to any spiritual man must have a troubling effect, a disturbing effect. Omar, he said, they are klal, this is the rule. It's the Chaim Volozhiner. And virtually everything that is brought here in the Otis Chaim of the Chaim Volozhiner is what he heard from the Vilna Gaon. What are we talking about? They are klal, this is the rule. Kol ma sheyigdor es atzmoy v'yifrish mireiyah. The more you try and control yourself and not look, achar kach, later on, im yireh v'yabi. If you do look and see, yiver bo ha-yitzel ke'esh, then the Yetzer Hara will be even more powerful than before. You don't get rid of the Yetzer Hara. All the devil gets more and more powerful, that's all. These disgusting adverts that were put all over Israel, not justifying the violence with which the matter was treated, but they were advertisements of the kind that would not be tolerated in any Western capital. You wouldn't see them in London. They've made fusses quietly of worse things. Occasionally an advertising agency puts up something in the tube stations, and a quiet little noise about it gets taken down very quickly. But nothing that was put up there could compare with what they put up all over Israel and Yerushalayim, all over the place. You don't see it in New York. Except in certain areas, the people know already. You don't want to see those kind of things, don't go to those areas. Very restricted areas, and they're narrowing the areas, they're limiting the areas where you would see such advertising. You would see it in books and periodicals, and you don't have to buy them. But to impose them at bus shelters on the public, that wouldn't be tolerated in any Western capital. We're not talking about South Africa where there's censorship. Not in Paris, not in Holland, you wouldn't see it. The liberal of the liberal, you wouldn't see such a thing. Yeah, you want to see such things, there are places to go. But to impose it on the public would not be allowed. And it's Israel, it's all over the place. Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. That's where you can see the real pornography. You want to see pornography? Go to Yerushalayim. There you'll see the kind of pornography that you can't see anywhere else. That's how far we've come. And what do they say, the other side? So you don't want to look, you don't have to look. You know what it is for a young man? Learning in yeshiva, doesn't go out with girls, unmarried, his mind is clear. Stand with a bus stop, and this is what he's confronted with. Don't look, in the drawing, that's even worse. In the end, it gets you, and there's a whole day already. We'll discuss this piece of the time we'll learn a little bit more just now. And so the young man that sees his reflection in the spring can't react by just pushing it aside. That would be negative. It would have negative effect on him. He could react with anger, as the Hasidim did in Yerushalayim. Except the Hasidim in Yerushalayim didn't know Chazal. The Gemara says, "The Kama of Tzali Alef, Achivel be'atzmoi Rosha." If a person wants to become aggressive against himself, he's permitted to. Aval Achivim shechovu bo chayon. But that doesn't give license to other people to become aggressive towards me. Let me get there. I want to express my aggression on myself. That mean, what am I allowed to do? Am I allowed to cut my wrists? What can I do? I can't burn down somebody else's basha. I want to express my aggression on myself. You want to be aggressive against yourself? That's permitted. The Gemara explains, that's by fasting. That's how a person expresses his aggression against himself. See in a moment what that does. The two kinds of aggression, but that's a form of aggression which works. Psychologists are battling today to work out how to channel aggression. They've just discovered that by allowing expression to aggression, the aggression gets worse. They always thought that you feel aggressive, act aggressively, and get it out of your system. They've just discovered it doesn't get out of your system. It's like addiction. Like a person who craves a cigarette. He's trying to give up, and you say to him, you know, you're craving so much, have a cigarette and get it out of your system. And he has the cigarette, and after he says, oh, thank you so much for that advice, it's too wonderful, I'm satisfied, I feel good now, finished, I won't be smoking again. 2 hours later, does he need a cigarette? And much more than he needed the earlier cigarette. The psychologist is suddenly finding he become addicted to aggression. And that by giving expression to aggression, we simply reinforce that need more and more and more. And when you express the aggression, it only temporarily eases the situation. But later on, the aggression is experienced with greater force and greater force. Again, like exactly as the Chayav Losha said with the Yetzer Hara. You push it aside, but eventually it's there, you're addicted. Can we see in Chazal a way of handling aggression against yourself? You can't handle it against others. Be aggressive against us. How aggressive? You're not allowed to damage your body, you know that. So for tomorrow you can take upon a fast. Now we're beginning to see certain methods of the expression of aggression. The one is fasting, the other is Nazirus. Shimon HaTzadik was worried that Nazirus is also being used as an act of aggression. And he's worried not that that's so negative in itself. Good, you want to express aggression, Nazirus, rather that than do something else terrible. But says Shimon HaTzadik, I can't eat your korban because I fear a technical problem. That after you've expressed your aggression by taking upon yourself the vows of Nazirus, I fear that later on you'll regret it. When the aggression has subsided, you'll regret it. And your korban is no korban. There's a technical problem that I as a Kohen can't eat your korban. That's his problem. But we see the use of self-denial as a means of the expression of aggression. In the Gemara in Bavakama also. Self-denial by means of fasting as an expression of aggression against oneself. So it's disastrous, but it's a sin. How can the Gemara say you're allowed to be aggressive against yourself when our Gemara here in Tainis says that even the Nazir is a sinner? How can you be allowed to take upon yourself a fast if you're not even a Nazir? And so it's disastrous, and we'll try and deal with the answers for this evening. Very important and very peculiar answer. But there are certain times that one has to perform a sin. You've got yourself into a corner where you need to sin. For example, if a person has a negative dream, it's a very vivid dream. One of the solutions open to him is to take upon himself a tiny scroll. fasts in order to say, as if to say to the Rebbe Shlomo, look, whatever you decreed upon me, which you were alerting me to by means of this dream, I'm suffering by taking upon myself a fast. Take that as my suffering and leave me alone. How is it following? What happens if one dreams the dream on Friday night? Fast on Shabbos. Then it's not allowed to fast on Shabbos. Now you're in a catch-22 situation. If you want to solve the problem of the dream, you have to fast. But fasting is wrong. So you have to fast. And you then have to fast a second time during the week as atonement for the sin of having fasted on Shabbos. So you're forced into a situation where the Torah says you have to sin. There's nothing you can do. That's your only way out, is to sin. Such examples within the Torah. One of those is a Nozer. There are times when you have to become a Nozer. Just as there are times when you have to take upon yourself a fast, even though fasting itself on days other than those days prescribed by the Torah, fasting is in itself a sin. Certainly fasting on Shabbos is a sin. Sometimes you have to do that, and then you need atonement for doing it. Just as the Nozir has to bring a sin offering for becoming a Nozir, although he was legally entitled to become a Nozir, and in fact sometimes obligated to become a Nozir, still you'll need atonement. It means that you can be legally obligated to commit a sin. Right? And that sin in itself is a mitzvah. You have to. The Torah says, you shall. And that's what we're going to try and understand a little bit more clearly this evening. Second question on the Medrash that we learned last week. This young man sees his reflection in the water and is overcome for a moment by his beautiful image. So he handles his Yetzirah, he doesn't just push it aside and pretend it's not there, he challenges it and says, the only way I'm going to handle you, Yetzirah, is by dedicating my hair to the Ribono Shel Olam, that thereby removing my sense of possessiveness and entitlement to the good looks that you're referring to. They're not mine, and I'm not entitled to it, and I have nothing to do with them. If I have it, very nice. But it's not mine, I don't feel it. And if the Rebbe Shem says, cut off your hair at the end of 30 days, I'll cut off my hair. I don't feel bonded to it, I don't feel so much part of it. I'm able to release myself a little bit. Why did he come in here? Why didn't he just do exactly that? Let him say, I raise, all right, let him say, behold, I hereby am makdish my hair to the Ribono Shel Olam. It now belongs to the temple, and I undertake to shave it off and give it all to the temple. Why did he have to become a Nozir? There are other laws that govern a Nozir as well, such as the prohibition of drinking wine. Why did he not drink wine? Why didn't he restrict his oath to the particular area where he was attacked by the Yetzirah? Why did he take on the general vows of Nazirus, which include the shaving off of his hair, but also include other prohibitions and restrictions, such as the drinking of wine? The parasha of the Nozir comes immediately after the parasha of the Satan. So it's a story of a woman whose relationships with a man other than her husband, married woman's relationships with a man other than her husband, are a little bit too intimate for the husband to like. And he warns her several times in the presence of Edim, in the presence of witnesses, to keep away from that man. She doesn't. She continues to have relationships with him, to be involved with him. The husband fears, but he's not sure, that she's in fact had relationships with him. And there's a way she's brought to the Beis Hamikdash, as you remember, and there's a way of testing to see whether in fact she has been faithful or she hasn't. Immediately after that parasha comes the parasha of the Nozir. Parasha brings the Gemara. Why? What is the connection between these two parashas? Parasha says, Shekol haroye soito b'kukula. Anybody who sees a soito, such a woman, being found guilty of unfaithfulness, yazir atzmi min hayayin. He should take upon himself the vows of the sin. Only an ordinary person wants to. This young man who was sitting at the well, he didn't see a Nozir, he didn't see a Soto Bikikula. He saw himself and he took upon himself Nozir. So he's praised for it. What's the connection between seeing a Soto taking on Nozir? Often discussed are one of the problems of our society and our living, is the shallowness of our thinking. Mostly we don't think at all. We're involved in quantitative life. It applies to the religious world and the world of the Torah just as well as it applies to the secular world. We're involved in quantitative living, we're involved in quantitative religion. We measure our progress by the number of things we keep or don't keep, by the number of pages we've learnt. No, it's not by the depth of our feelings, the depth of our thinking. Restrictions on that depth of thinking are such that it applies in every area. In science and technology, and history, and in economics, in all Western studies, we study cause and effect. What causes such and such a thing to happen? What caused it? If we're studying history, we want to know what caused it in the past. And if we're studying science, we want to know what would cause something. But even there, there's a great deal of superficiality. Let's look at a few examples of how Chazal sees it. Rafuna used to trade in wine. He was a wine maker, seller. That was his panos, and that's how he had to live. And 400 barrels, 400 vats of wine became vinegar. And sound. Terrible luck for a person like that. All his investments were written down. Al Legabe, that Rafuna, after the Rafuna, Sigur the Rafuna. Yehuda, the brother of Rafael of Siga, the Rabbonim, the other Rabbonim, went to visit him to comfort him. Our religion has become so formalized, and we're so ignorant of the depths of it. We all know that if somebody has lost a dear one, the Menachem Oz will be going to visit him. Person is ill, we know the situation is bigger clothing, we're going to live. And what happens if a person is depressed? No, no, no. We don't categorize that. We're so shallow. We don't ask ourselves, why does the Torah say you must visit a animal? Why does the Torah say you must visit a sick person? Because we need people to participate in the self. We need people to be able to speak to if he wants to. We need to feel identified. When one suffers the loss, one feels lonely. And when one suffers the illness, one feels that nobody really understands the situation in which one is in. So one needs people to show them that the person values it, that people do understand, is not alone. So why is it different if he has psychological illness? If he's feeling depressed, why should it be different? Is it necessary for the Torah to say that too? It should be obvious. We don't think that. We just pick up the man, we look in the Shulchan, it says that, it says that, that's what we do. If we go a little bit further, we don't do it. The importance, a person loses money. And that's a very good thing. It's a lot. It's a good thing to comfort him, to speak to him. It's all fair. Talking about a person who's lost a little bit of money, but a person who's lost all his money. But a wealthy person overnight is no longer there. He needs that. He needs that comfort. So Rav Yehuda and Rabbonim went to visit Rav Huna. The Omru Lehim, they said to him, La'ayin Mar B'Mil. Analyze Rav Huna. What caused it? What would you think straight away? This is the great. The temperature in which the room is kept. No, what caused it? Making wine like this for years and years. they say I lion marbinile, meaning not in the external objective order. Don't blame the deterioration of your wine on the object. Not in the object. It's in the subject. It's in your relationship with the world. It's not that's where everything is found. Don't blame the object. Always look for something in the object. That's how we are today. Nobody would think further than analyzing objectively, scientifically, what went wrong with the wine. The problem must be there. We discussed that last week. The problem is not with me. The problem must be in the object. So he said, do you really think that I've done wrong? Is that your opinion of me? That I've done something so terrible to deserve the loss of my wealth? On your way. Listen to how they answer. Do you suspect the Ribbono Shel Olam? Do you suspect God of being so irrational to cause you suffering without cause? Just so he just picked on you? You don't want us to suspect that maybe you've done wrong, but you're willing to suspect that God did wrong? One of you has done wrong. Either God has done wrong or you've done wrong. We prefer to think you've done wrong, and you should also prefer to think thus.
Malu said to them,
if anybody's heard anything I've done wrong, please tell me. Totally can't figure out anything that he's done wrong.
Omule, they said to him, Haki Shmielai. We have heard that you did something wrong. The Loyoiv Mar Shabishul Arisa.
In your vineyards, you have an Oris. Oris is a manager. He's a manager who takes a share of the profits, not a salary. No, that's an Oris. And we heard that when it came to the waste materials of the vineyard, you didn't give your manager his share. You gave him his share of the wine. But the waste, the scrap, the waste also, he's entitled to his share of that as well. And all the product of the vineyard, including the waste, he's entitled to.
Omar Lui said to them, Miko Shavik Yilidimine, Okoganib Lekule.
If you know, he said, you're accusing me of not leaving him his share of the waste. Do you know how much he robs from me? He's a gun as that manager.
I didn't give him the waste. He's stolen from me a lot more than I did him out of in the waste.
Omrule Hainu de Amriinchi, also Ganova Gonuri, Hainu Tai. Once you start stealing from Ganovim, you also taste of it. Don't start justifying it because he's stolen from you. You're a thief. The fact that he's also a thief is another issue. But you're a thief. The taste of it.
Omalu Kabil Mulai Biyadni.
He accepted, he said, I accept upon myself nearby that I will return to my Oris what I did when I did. Then there are two views as to what happened. Some say that the vinegar returned to wine, and others say there was a shortage of vinegar that season and the price of vinegar shot up, and that vinegar was able to recoup the losses by selling the vinegar rather than by selling the wine. Be that as it may, the immediate analysis is all the way back. Don't look at the object. Your wine has gone off. The problem is not the wine. Go further back. Go to the grapes. And don't stop at the grapes, because it's not the grapes which caused it. The problem is your relationship to the grapes. What have you done wrong in your dealing in grapes? That's where you'll find the problem. After searching and searching, you'll find that you didn't treat your manager correctly. And that's why the business deteriorated. Not because of the grapes. That's deep thinking. We tend to think that you need deep thinking in English literature. You need deep thinking in science. You need deep thinking in economics. In all these areas, you don't need deep thinking, and you dare not think too deep. Because if in an economics exam, you were given the case history of Rabuna, and you wrote that the reason for the loss of Rabuna's business was the fact that he cheated his Oris out of some waste product, you will be failed. That's not accepted in economic thinking. It's too deep. You must think superficially. You've got to stop at a certain point and not think further. And if in history you're going to start saying that the cause of X, Y, and Z was the immorality of somebody or other, or the bad motivation, or the evil intent, or you'll be given the case history of the flood, and you say the cause of the flood and of the destruction of humanity in sociology was because of the evil behavior of the people of that time, you will be failed. You will not be fast. You've thought too deeply. You're not allowed to think that deeply in these subjects. Torah needs to be deeply. And we usually take that to mean, what Torah do you need to think deeply? You're learning Gemara, you need to think deeply. You're learning Chumash, you need to think deeply. That's true. When you're learning this, you need to think even more deeply. When you're learning yourself, when you're studying yourself, that's when you really need to think. When you're just studying your relationship with the world around you, that is where there must be no limitation to the extent or to the depth of your thinking. Right down to the origin, right down to the source. Many Gemaras like that. One more thing in the next. Shabbos, that quickly tests. Omer Rabbi Chia Bar Abba. Rabbi Chia Bar Abba says, "Pam ochas misarachtes the balabayas belukti." Once I was a guest at the balabos in Lukti. They hiviyu lefonav shulchan shel zohar. And they brought before him, came in real time, carried in a table, as was the custom those days. They used to, in the lounge, used to be a lounge, and then they would bring the table in when it was dinner time and take the whole table out afterwards. Which makes a lot of sense, by the way. So it's a little bit, he's complaining, he's got to carry the food in and out. He has to carry the whole table in and out. The ideal of Pomer Shukran Shazor, Mosu Shisha Sadre Odin, 16 people had to carry this table. The Shishis Reshash Loishal Keset Kruis Boy, and there were 16 silver chains attached to it. The Kairos, the Kursus, the Tunius, the Talukius Kursboy, and attached to it were matching sets of glasses and goblets and plates. Can you imagine the sight? For all of Chomine Michael, the Chomine Megodim, and all wonderful foods and delicacies were laid on this table. And when the servants used to bring this table in, they used to say, La Hashem Ha'oretzum Loya, the whole world belongs to Hashem. When they took the table away, heavens belong to God, but the earth is given to man. I'm sitting there, says Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, with my eyes as wide as saucers, looking at all this. I've seen such a thing before. The man says, come and have a snack, and I sit down. It's unbelievable. I'm out of Beni. What have you done to achieve all this? Any normal human being would say, interesting story. I bought a property once in Dornfontein, and I sold the property, and with what I sold the property, I invested it in a field outside Johannesburg, and it so happened it was a gold mine, and so it happened. That's how it happened. Omali, he said, Kotzat, I was a butcher. Sounds the same story, a butcher in Dornfontein. And whenever I found a beautiful animal, I might use it to have a Shabbos. I used to put that one away for Shabbos. That's how I got it. Not through business skills. That if I am to trace my wealth to its origins, that's the origin of my wealth, not my business skills. Happy are you to have merited this, and blessed be Hashem who has given you. Understand. It's taken for granted. That's how the conversation goes. What have you done to achieve this? It's taken for granted. The question is not an economic question. What is that of interest to a Rabbi Chia Bar Abba? Is he interested in how you achieved it business wise? He's interested in the moral aspect. What kind of a human being are you? But the Ribbono Shel Olam has given you such incredible bracha. What did you do? What is your lifestyle? You must be somebody very special. That's how it is. Story after story, and we're just taking for granted that when these questions are asked, they're not being asked objectively, they're being asked in terms of relationship between the subject and the object. Have a salik bedarke. Rav Popper was going up a step ladder. Hishtamit karei one of the steps cracked, boil the maple, he was about to fall. Omar hashta ki chayu, man the sandilan from the Haru Shabbos, so if they are with us before him. Immediately Rafot, what does he think? He says, if I fall, people are going to look upon me as though I was Mechalel Shabbos, so I was Oibed Avodah Zarah. It's a terrible Chilul Hashem if I fall. Because a Mechalel Shabbos, or a person who serves idolatry, he used to get stoned. You remember how they used to stone in those days? Not the stones, they used to push a person off a building. It's the most terrible of their sentences. He used to be thrown off a building. And nowadays, the Gemara says, if you don't have a Beis Din to be able to issue death sentences, the Burnish Lam organizes that somebody who needs Dira, he falls off from a height and he dies that way. He says, Rav Popper, this is a terrible thing. What am I worried about? He's about to fall. Can you imagine the terror? There he is up there. The step is broken. He's about to fall. And all he's worried about is the Chilul Hashem it will cause. Not worried about his family and the pain and the suffering. The Chilul Hashem. People will say that Rav Popper served idolatry. Must have been. Or it was Mechalel Shabbos. Otherwise, why would he have fallen in this way? He doesn't say, don't be silly, Rav Popper. It's a broken step. What are you getting all spiritual about? Shema oni vol yotchod alitim. Maybe a poor man came to you and you didn't adequately give him pamas. Because we learn, goes on to say, that a person who does that, if he says idolatry, we're going to be discussing that tomorrow, but he also sees immediately. Here by Rav Lidiftis immediately sees and expresses to Rav Popper, sure there's a moral reason for your falling, and it doesn't have to be that you were serving idolatry or that you were Mechalel Shabbos. It'd be much subtler things that are demanding this. Attempts to explain and to rationalize the events in any other way other than having a moral origin and a moral source. That's deep thinking in Musa. That's deep thinking in the area of ethics. Last night, a lot of people in this area were very troubled. They thought the revolution had come. They heard shooting and bombs. I had already worked out exactly where it was, and which side was shooting when. I could already hear the backwards and forwards. You could hear shouts from the Africans in the streets. I just didn't know what it was. They're shouting. So I could hear also from the shouts. We were sure that the picture was becoming very clear in my mind exactly what was going on. I realized one thing. It seems to be coming nearer and nearer. I realized to hide away from it is not possible. It's coming, it's coming. The only thing is, I've got to know what to do about it. Am I Shabbos after all? Is it serious enough that I must go and open my safe and pull out my gun? What exactly should I do? So I went outside and had a look. Beautiful fire crackers in the air. Beautiful. And I went back to enjoying my Shabbos, and I said to myself, "Good. I'm so happy and so lucky. I thought the Ribbono Shel Olam was beginning to punish us, and now it's just beautiful firecrackers. You watch the firecrackers and enjoy them." That's not the way Chazal says. There's a Chazal about that event, believe it or not. There is a pasuk in the Chukosa. V'hanish orim bochem. Those of you who left over after all the wars and troubles, v'hevesi meirech bilvavon, I will bring fear into their hearts. It's part of the curses in the Chukosa. The artsos ayuvehim, as they live in the lands of their enemies, I will bring curses into them. The roda, I will bring fear into them. The Roda Fisom Kol Ole Nido. They will be pursued by the sound of a waving leaf. The Nosu Menusas Chere. And they will run and flee as if they are being chased by swords. The Noflu, and they will fall. The Ein Rode. And there's nobody chasing. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Kolcho. Once we were sitting in the forest between the trees, the noshvo haruach v'itichu ha'olim zeh. And the wind blew, very quiet and still day, and we were sitting learning Torah. All of a sudden there was a rustle in the trees behind us. A madnu v'ratznu, we got up and we ran. Those days, they were robbers, they were highwaymen, they were anti-Semites who would murder and kill and rob, if you wasn't safe anywhere. We feel nervous nowadays, nothing compared to the way Jews have lived. Wow, potential. Always worried and nervous as to who's going to be after them next. And we ran and we said, "Oy, what have we done? The robbers are going to get us." When we'd run far enough, we risked turning around to look behind us. We saw there was nobody there. And we sat down in our place and we cried. We didn't talk, Baruch Hashem, it's nothing, silly of us, isn't it? We cried, V'amanu Oilonu, now we really need to worry. Sh'oleinu Niskayim Aposuk, we have been cursed. This is worse, had we been chased by real robbers, that wouldn't have been a curse, it would have been natural to be scared. But we've been scared of nothing. V'roda Beschem Kol Olenido, V'nosu Munus Ascheri B'nei Eimo, V'noflu V'en Reidev V'blikoya, that's the curse of this Pasuk we've been afflicted by. That's how it comes out. Hey, my goodness, we should say firecrackers we were running away from. Is that what we've come to? That we're so terrified that we're afflicted by this curse that somebody throws a few firecrackers? In the old days, everybody knew firecrackers, used to go out and have a look. Any firecrackers. What's there to be proud about? You forget you were running away 5 minutes a day. Now you say only firecrackers. The way you should look at it, I was running away from firecrackers. What's wrong with me? I'm just going to run under the pit. This is a joke. And I can't run away from them. This one will run to Australia, and there will be no fire. There will be alright. Be the same empty individual with his fears and with his worries and with his concerns. We can't run away from ourselves. Yes, we can't run away from. And as long as we will blame our circumstances on things outside of ourselves, we'll be running for the rest of our lives, running and running and running. We will never find peace. And all these chazal that's looking at, they didn't blame the pogroms and say, if it weren't for the fact that we were living in such an unsafe environment, we wouldn't have entered our minds that the rustling was robbers. If we were living in tranquil places, we wouldn't have thought that it was robbers. It's because of the environment in which we live. That's not how that happened. They cried at their own inadequacy. They had been afflicted by this curse. But they saw it in themselves. They didn't see it in something external. This young man who looks at his reflection in the water, he realizes that Yetzirah wants to get the baby. He said there were several options taken to him. The option he took was to become a Nozi. And he asked, why did he have to become a Nozi? Wouldn't it have been sufficient for him to do just half of the Nozi? He said, just on his head, give his head to the Beit HaMikdash and to cut it off after 30 days and that's all. His hair was the problem, cutting his hair will be the solution. No. That he understands. The hair is not the problem, and cutting the hair is not the solution. I am the problem. And cutting my hair is only removing the symptom, it's not removing the cause. I need to go through a process of education and self-development until I've solved my problems. The Yetzirah will never leave me alone. All very well, blame it on the Yetzirah, blame it on the fast shelter, blame it on the hair. You'll always find something outside of yourself to blame it on. I am the problem. And therefore any aggression which has to be expressed must be expressed against me. And the means, the personal means of aggression itself oneself against oneself is truly weak. You wish it back. That's me understanding. Not reactionary aggression. Well thought out of it. All Haroya Tetobikil Kriya. A person who sees a traitor in this dress. What is the tendency to stop the society? And that's the society in which I'm living. How do you expect me, Ribbono Shel Olam, to be anything if I'm living in a society such as this? Blame it on the society. Blame it on the others. burn down the bashes. It's all this. That's really it. So again, thinking of justifying Lazarus and the bashes is repulsive and degenerate beyond words of description. Nor can one justify the reaction. And burn down the bash shelter, what's that going to say? Is that where the problem lies? In the bash shelter? That's the problem? Well, the problem, the problem we have. The aggression has to be self-directed. That is the thing. Things that perhaps no Yerusha is permitted to be aggressive against oneself, one is not permitted to be aggressive against oneself. Earlier statement that you see where you see a paper. You see a woman who has been disgraced by having been found to have been having an affair with a married woman. Your solution to that, your reaction to that, is not anger with her, but anger with yourself. She has been exposed. She has been contaminated. The contamination has occurred. Once one has been contaminated, you can't change it. The effect of visual impact is permanent and indelible. And anything we expose our eyes to, anything we experience, has been experienced, and that's it. So what do you mean to do? Burn the bash shelter, because that means now you didn't see the other. Yes, you saw the other. Burn it out of yourself, that's where the fire has to be. The bash shelter is good, getting rid of the bash shelter, that's fine. But that's not the end of the story. That won't burn out the image which you've got inside you, which is imprinted upon yourself. You've got to do some burning out inside yourself there. You have to excise that contamination from within yourself. You are contaminated.
Once one realizes that, the purpose of Mezuzah is to excise contamination. One begins to understand. Mezuzah is a self-egotism. Yes, you are. You're not permitted to cause yourself suffering. You're not permitted to deny things of yourself. The world was given to us to enjoy and to utilize in a correct fashion, not to deny ourselves. But there are times when one has to excise a part of oneself because one is being contaminated. Examples of this, no question, one isn't permitted to cut off a limb. To cut off a skin, you can't do it. You're not even allowed to touch yourself. No. What happens? I'm sure the person has a growth in a limb. It has to cut it off. But the fact that one has to cut it off is part of the consequence, is part of the punishment for whatever it is that one is afflicted. Part of the consequence. The fact that one has to become a Nazir is an indication that I have to excise something within myself, contamination within myself. I have to do it. It's wrong to do such a thing, but I have no choice but to do the wrong. And the Torah allows me to do that.
Then the aggression is directed against one. There one has the whole attitude and the whole approach taking upon oneself more than that which the Torah requires. There are two ways of doing it. Mentioned them last week. But the thing is a chumrah. It's something worse than a chumrah. There's such a thing as a mishugas. One thing, a mishugas. The din is that if a non-Jew catches wine or an unsealed bottle of wine, one may not use the wine. That's not a chumrah. That's a halacha. That's a din in the shulchanot. There is a community that has a very far-fetched chumrah. They say that if a non-Jew saw the wine, also at least the kiddush you shouldn't use. That's not halach. It's a chumrah. But I went into somebody's office the other day and he said, sorry, I can't offer you tea with milk, the non-Jew saw the milk. That's already mishugas. That's already mishugas. But that's how these things go. He said it, by the way, in front of his non-Jewish secretary. And she thinks she's waiting for a normal balabos. She doesn't realize it. She thinks that's Torah, that's Yiddish class. And non-Jew sees the milk, it's not Yiddish. The there is such a thing as taking upon oneself humus, additional self-denial and severities, all as part of the other. Religion is good. Therefore, the more religion I impose upon myself, the better I am. No change from within. Doesn't demand any change from within. I just take on new things and impose them upon myself, and the more I take on, the bigger I get and the more religious I am. We have this very much, as I mentioned I think in previous shiurim. The more shiurim I attend, the more I'm learning. The truth is it's the other way around. The more time I spend on each shiur I hear, the more I'm learning. The more shiurim I attend, the less I'm learning. Can't be, the human mind doesn't say good shiurim. If they're weak shiurim, all the other ones are wasting time. But if they're good shiurim, and you're talking about people with limited time available, you're not talking about people who are sitting and learning all day and all night, they've got a couple of hours a day. How much can one really handle a week in terms of number of shiurim? I don't know that one can effectively handle more than one shiurim. Yes. Let's say two shiurim a week, three shiurim a week. But people running around to 6 years and 8 years and 10 years and disconnected shiurim from different schools and different approaches and all the rest of it, and they're running around thinking the more shiurim they get into, the better it is. That's compulsive Yiddish. But shiurim are good, so if I take another one, I'm good. So it is. You're the same. You're just dressing up, that's all you do. And you think that the clothes change. The clothes make you look different, but they don't make you different. You're the same. You were an Amoritz, now you're an Amoritz, it goes to Shiurim. You were an Amoritz, it went to one Shiur, and now you're an Amoritz, it goes to 10 Shiur. And in 10 years' time, you'll be an Amoritz who is 10 years older, who goes to 10 Shiurim. That's all that's changing. You're getting older, and the number of Shiurim that you're not changing, you change by depth of thinking. And that's by directed learning, by deep learning, by integrated learning, by slow learning. That's where you change, not a number of Shiurim. So it is. Keeps the mitzvah, one has to be more of the mitzvah, more chumrah. One has to be very careful. But there's another thing, which is liquid halacha. Being meticulous about every halacha. That chas v'sholom is not chumrah. Liquid halacha is a very important part of Jewish life. The moment I learn that that is required of the halacha, although it's a minute detail, but it is a detail within the broad structure of halacha, and I immediately start keeping it, that's not Shigas Chas V'Sholom, that's not Chumri, that's Yiddishkeit, that's Torah. For that I need knowledge. I need to know and understand where it fits in and where it comes from. Not just to pick it out from all over the place. And for that there needs to be knowledge and understanding. There's another form of taking upon oneself all sorts of things. That is a sense of Aroyah Seto B'Kimpula. Torah is not imposed in the Jewish something. It's imposed if you have to become a Muslim. But the Torah allows the facility for the Jews if you wish to become a Muslim. Why might you wish to become a Muslim? Because I've been contaminated. The understanding that there's contamination in me which needs to be controlled. How do I control it in the case of the Jews? I say to myself, in this particular case, this disgraced woman, what caused her to be disgraced? What was it? So if we think, maybe she has an unhappy marriage. Is that a reason to be unfaithful? Unhappy marriage is a reason to ask for a divorce. Not a reason to be unfaithful. But just while she was unhappy, a very kind and thoughtful man appeared on the scene and started taking and being very attentive to him. I'm thinking to myself, don't forget, we're thinking deeply now, we're trying to analyze what brought this to me. That also doesn't explain. A rational woman, she knows her commitment to her husband and family. Good, she's unhappy. Okay, and a man is becoming and is being over attentive and over courteous to her and over flattering to her. Ooh, she knows he's not her husband. What set it off? He must have invited her out. Also, what did she come and visit her in the home of the husband? And what did he invite her? Where did he invite her? They must have had it meet. interested in a rational sense, such a thing couldn't have happened. Now, I've been contaminated by seeing the end result of a moment of irrational thought. That's what's happened. I only saw the end result. And that's what's affecting me. Person sees it, accidents on the road, blood spewing all over the place, broken glass, dead bodies. So you think you've seen it, and it makes an impression. So one says, I'll drive carefully. You drive carefully. The way you're driving, you're driving to a wedding. You drive to the wedding carefully. And you have a good few lechayims at the wedding, and you drive home from the wedding carefully. You missed the whole point. And you saw the accident with the glass and all the rest of it. You could have said to yourself, what brings a person to drive like that? It's not rational. No normal human being would drive at those speeds and on the wrong side of the road. What made him drive on the wrong side of the road? So what do you say? I'll be careful, I won't drive on the wrong side. You've missed the point. It was the drink which did it. It wasn't a rational consideration. And if you want to avoid that accident, what you do is you don't drive when you drink or you don't drink. That's what the Haroya Soita B'Kikula. You've seen the end result, but follow it right through to the beginning. It was a glass of wine that did it. That's what did it. All the other things are extraneous. So he says, I'm not having wine. What does that help? You're not having wine. You're not a woman. If a woman saw a soita, she says, look what can happen to a woman if she has wine. I won't have wine. Then I understand it. But he's a man. What does it help him not having wine? He's simply showing physically and practically, he's giving expression to his deep thinking. Having traced the cause of her disgrace back to its origin, I'm staying with wife. And that brings about an incredible power again. That's the expression of deep thinking. I'm behaving in accordance with my thinking. I don't think one way and behave in another. I perceive something and I express my perception in my behavior and in my conduct. As a result of that, it's not only wine I'm going to be careful. Every day I'm going to be careful. I'm not going to have to be careful. No, I have wine, it's grapes, raisins, anything of grape content. So whenever he eats, he's going to sit down, he's invited out, he's going to say, by the way, any grapes, anything of grape content here? No? Good. Can you eat whatever he does? He's going to look, examine, like we do with kashrus. He's got to do it. He doesn't have heksha, they don't have special shaving for the ziri. They don't have a sort of a basin stamp with an N showing that it's kosher not only for ordinary people but also for the ziri. I'm sure one of these days we have such a heksha. But at this stage we don't have. So he's got to do it all himself. He's got to inquire of every product he touches. He's got to inquire and check, does it have any grape origin? Was it made in the same utensils as products with grape origin? He's constantly reminding himself and being aware of his oath which he undertook in the cognizance of what wine could cause ultimately. And that makes him aware of all these. The ability to pinpoint the source of a problem and steer away at the source changes the human being into a far more masterful individual. Says the Ibn Ezra, the word nozir comes from the word nezir. And nezir is a crown. He says, because Kol b'nei Adam avdei taveis ha'ilo, all human beings are slaves of their impulses. V'hamelech be'emes sheyesh lo nezer v'ateres malchus b'roshim. And a true king who wears a crown of glory around him, around his head. That's a person who is liberated from impulses. The way to be liberated from impulses is not when you have the impulse to say, oi, I mustn't do it. But we learned that we only go on, that doesn't help, it's too late. The way to be liberated from the impulses at the origin, to avoid, to identify the origin of a problem, and steer away from it. With all those Gemaras we do, a man's wealth traced to the origin, a man's poverty traced to the origin, always tracing to the origin. And in the very next piece of the Chaim Volozhin, he says something which appears to be opposite, but now we understand it. You remember we learned, he said, that if a person merely stops himself from looking at things he shouldn't be looking at, ultimately when he is exposed to it, it's going to be much worse. And in the very next paragraph they bring in the same name, the same as Chaim Volozhin, Machshava ro gam arishonim lo yitzvim. A bad thought, thinking bad thoughts, even the rishonim, even the early ones, went completely straight from. The im meitziach daitim in a machshava ro. And if you can deflect your thinking from the bad thoughts, and by the way, the means of deflection is not to try and block out the bad thought, that doesn't work. The only means of deflection is to displace the bad thought with more positive thinking. Start thinking, change your life, your attitude, your life. If one is able to do that, bezu kofa sitra achra, with that you are able to master the sitra achra, the power of the yetzer. He just said it doesn't help. He's talking about two different things. Here he's talking about thought. In the first paragraph he was talking about deed. Once you're thinking along that line, it doesn't help merely to stop the deed. It doesn't help. Sure it helps, but it makes it more difficult later on. If you can root it out at the source, then you can solve the problem properly. When the man sees a sofa between kulo, he sees a sofa in her disgrace, and he traces her unfaithfulness right back to its origin. And he therefore for a month says, I'm going to be conscious of this for the whole month. I'm not going to have wine to remember what I've seen. That affects everything he does. In all his actions and everything he does, he's aware of the necessity to be aware of what causes what is the cause and what is the effect, and to tap the negative out right at the origin, at the grape source, never mind the wine, even the grape source. It's not just that he shouldn't become intoxicated. Not even a grape should a nozir have. In fact, the Gemara says he isn't even to walk through a vineyard. If there's a vineyard in his way, he should walk all the way around, not through it. The whole concept of Nazirus is avoid the source of the source of the source of it. And after 30 days of living that way, the man becomes a Kodesh. After 30 days of living with that depth of thought and with that insight, the man becomes a Kodesh, the man becomes holy and sanctified and seated in his life. So we need to know that it is, apart from Meshugas, it is a Chumrah. Apart from a chumrah, there's such a thing as a dikduk halacha, being meticulous in halacha. There's another thing as well, where the person says, knowing my own inadequacy, although such and such is permitted, I can't do it. I can't trust myself to do it. That's the true chumrah. That's a real chumrah. In other words, the Torah says you may, and I'm not imposing it upon you. I can't do it myself. I'm not great enough. Humra is there as an expression of inadequacy, not as an expression of adequacy. A person has to acknowledge his own humra as a fault. That's why Nazirus itself is a fault. Nazirus itself is a sin which needs sometimes to be utilized. But always in the knowledge that at the end of it you've got to bring a problem back. As holy as you become through your Nazirus. Never forget it was because you saw a safer that you feel it was because you were contaminated that you had to become a nozir in the first place. Don't stand on your perch of chumrah and look down at the world upon you. You stand down in the depths of your chumrah and look up at the world around you. Now how lucky all you people are that you don't need to become a nozir. You don't need all these chumrah. I need them. In Rebellion, this is the time, nearly 90. Asked me where I was going on Friday after I was going to help. He said, I'm 90 years old and I'm blind in one eye. And I'm scared to go to Chabad. The things I see there disturb me for weeks afterwards. I can't learn from it. And you, the young man with kids' eyesight in both your eyes, and you not scared? He couldn't understand that I was willing to be scared to Chabad. He couldn't understand it. That's the person who understands the reason for these things. I don't go into Chabad. Why? I can't trust myself. That's the pattern. That's the girdle of being strong. Stand to see these chumras not as self-righteousness, but as an acknowledgement, so to say, of inadequacy. So yes, there are two parts to the module. As there are two parts to all of us. He is a Kodesh and he is a person. He becomes a holy person through the depths of his insight. But the reason that he became that holy person is because he was once contaminated. Even contamination is dealt with properly. Can lead us to higher and higher levels of tradition. And we need to think that if we have been contaminated, as we all have and are being contaminated, that there is no chance of recovery. We're prepared to be honest with ourselves. If we're prepared to acknowledge the contamination. If we're prepared to see the problems in the subject and not in the object. If we're prepared to blame ourselves when we get scared of firecrackers or when we get distracted by advertisements on the bus shelters. If we're prepared to see the problem within ourselves and to tackle the problem within ourselves rather than in the object, then it is possible through the correct handling of that, to reach levels of tradition, to reach levels of sanctity, which escape that of the uncontaminated person. For that reason, that the Mokhin Shabbali Tshuva engine, when a person has really done Tshuva, then he has really excised those. That contamination which he's acknowledged and accepted and worked upon himself at the root of the cause to avoid it happening again. In a place where a Baal Tshuva, where such a Baal Tshuva stands, then Tzadikim Gemurim Yecholim now. A Tzadik Gomer, one who has never been contaminated, can't even stand. Contamination is not a reason for depression. Contamination is not a reason for disillusion and for giving up. Contamination is a challenge. A challenge to face the problem. Analyze it to repair it and to build and rise to higher levels of excellence.